whether in the matter of its vessels, that they should be completely perfect, or whether in the matter of the vessels of its servants, such as these clothes, that they wear at the time of the service, everything should be proper and completely perfect. No beauty should be lacking from any of these things. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 78, Sartorial Specifics and Jewish Identity. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
It is an anecdote I quote often. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once asked the Catholic historian Paul Johnson what the latter had learned as he worked on and completed his enormous tome, A History of the Jews. Johnson replied by essentially saying that there are some cultures in which the individual is emphasized, while others place a premium upon the collective. Judaism, however, simultaneously stresses both. Or as Rabbi Sacks wrote, quote, Judaism, he continued, was the most successful example he knew of that managed the delicate balance between both, giving equal weight to individual and collective responsibility. Judaism was a religion of strong individuals and strong communities. This, he said, was very rare and difficult, and constituted one of our greatest achievements, end quote. Emphasizing the individual and his or her uniqueness, while at the same time placing a premium, an enormous emphasis, on covenantal collective responsibility. This indeed is Judaism, and this complexity is captured in a seeming sartorial technicality that emerges in Exodus. As we have mentioned in an earlier episode of 10 Minute Mitzvah, Moses is instructed to oversee the creation of cultic clothing on behalf of his brother Aaron and Aaron's children, garments that are made lechavod ulitifaret, for dignity and splendor, which must be worn during the service in the temple or tabernacle. Included among these garments are, first, the apron, or ephod, which hangs from two stones upon the shoulders of the high priest, and the choshen, the breastplate, containing 12 stones parallel to the 12 tribes of Israel. These two garments are included among the four unique to the high priest alone, and they figure in one of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah. An insistence, an obligatory instruction, that when they are worn, they never be detached from one another, that they be forever linked by strands of tehillet, blue wool. This is stated explicitly in Exodus. V'lo yizach choshen me'al ha'efod. The breastplate must never be detached from the apron. But why is Exodus so insistent on appropriate procedure for Kohanic clothing? The anonymous medieval work Sefer HaChinuch, or Book of Education, suggests that here the Bible merely seeks perfection in attire, as in all else, when ministering in the presence of God. As he writes, and here I am utilizing the translation from Sefaria, whether in the matter of its vessels, that they should be completely perfect, or whether in the matter of the vessels of its servants, such as these clothes, that they wear at the time of the service, everything should be proper and completely perfect. No beauty should be lacking from any of these things. And in truth, it is from the beauty of the matter that the breastplate should not be loose and wandering upon the chamber of his heart, but it should rather sit fixed like a type of thing set in plaster. And we will hold to this explanation until we hear better than it. So Sefer HaChinuch tells us, as rendered by Sefaria, with a few additional words for clarity, with a final sentence that indicates that the author is open to other explanations. I will humbly suggest one, inspired by Paul Johnson. The breastplate and the apron must be forever attached, for only taken together in tandem do they embody the individuality and collectivity that sits at the heart of Judaism itself. For consider, as we noted when we discussed Kohanic clothing in Bible 365, the apron's two stones that sit on the shoulders of the high priest contain the 12 tribes of Israel together, or as the verse in Exodus puts it, six of their names on the one stone, and the names of the six that remain on the other stone, according to their birth order. But when it comes to the breastplate, there we have individual gems. Each one is separately engraved with the name of a tribe. Again, the verse. And the stone shall be according to the names of the children of Israel, 12 according to their names, like the engraving of a signet, every one according to his name, they shall be for the 12 tribes. As I further noted, whereas on the shoulder stones of onyx, the names are all undifferentiated, on the breastplate, each is different, each inscribed on a separate gem that is unique from the other, each with its own luster and its own luminance, each one separate, each one singular. Thus, the people of God's covenant are embodied through the stones of the apron collectively and through the stones of the breastplate individually. Which one truly expresses the essence of Jewish identity? Both do, and only when they are joined. That is why they must never be separated. This rule regarding garments, then, expresses the Judaic worldview, and it can also be found in what is today the most famous photograph in Jewish history, David Rubinger's three soldiers standing at the Western Wall on the day that the old city of Jerusalem was liberated, on the day the sacred city was united. As I've argued, part of the power of the photograph lies in the fact that it depicts not leaders, spiritual or political, but rather three simple soldiers united with one another. Thus, the photo has been compared to the American image of the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima. And because both of these photographs focus not on leaders, but on the everyman, we actually ultimately identify with it in a profoundly powerful way. It speaks to us in a manner that an image of a leader does not. By emphasizing the everyman, it embodies the collective. And yet, there is also a difference between the Iwo Jima photograph and the three soldiers at the wall. Whereas in the photograph depicting this moment in World War II, the faces of the soldiers are obscured, with nothing distinguishing one from the other. In Rubinger's photograph, we see each of the three faces. They are joined, they are unified, but they are also individuated. The photograph embodies, in other words, individuality as well as unity, covenantal collectivity, and individual experience of the miracle that has suddenly been wrought. A miracle in Jewish history, which the heroic soldiers of the IDF courageously and wondrously made manifest. To be an individual and to be part of a wondrous history that is unlike any other, and to discover as a Jew your own individuated role in the furthering of this miraculous tale. This is what it means to discover one's Jewish identity and the seeming technicality about Kohanic clothing actually expresses this to us. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.